Welcome to another episode of the Advocacy in Action series, which focuses on the people, policies, and activities in Columbus and DC that stand to impact your business. I'm your host, John Rizzo, VP of the Akron Canton Advocacy Alliance. And today we're holding a conversation with a candidate for the Ohio House, Derek Hall, as part of a broader effort to provide information to members regarding the November general election. Welcome, Representative Hall.
All right. Thanks so much for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you and I know each other. Many folks in the community may already know you, but for the benefit of those who don't, just share a little bit about you, your background, what motivated you to run for office.
Yeah. So first, thanks for having me today. I certainly appreciate it. So a background, you know, I like to tell people at the time that, you know, I had a really challenging upbringing, right? So both my parents had drug addiction issues, lived in public housing until I was 13. That's when my mom finished college. And my life really changed, right? She became a public school teacher in Akron. We moved out of public housing into a regular house on North Hill, blue collar house. And that was kind of the start for me. So always really believed in education, really pursued it passionately. So went to Akron U, I did a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry, went to Ohio State, got a doctorate in pharmacy, my law degree, my MBA, then later went to Harvard Medical School and got a master's in healthcare operations there. You know, professionally, you know, I've worked for Fortune 50 companies, you know, and I've worked with both large and small nonprofits and have a lot of board work under my belt too. And then if that wasn't enough, I serve in the U.S. Military. So I'm a U.S. Army Reserve.
Service.
Oh, no, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank my wife for that because she's the one who allows me to do that. So, but I'm an Army JAG officer and, you know, specialize in the law of armed conflict or the law of war, which is fairly relevant right now. And so that's a bit of background why I ran. You know, I was on the Akron School Board for 4 years and during COVID, and probably the most challenging, difficult job I've ever had. I told people all the time that job was way harder than being a state rep. you know, but in that job, what I realized, it was a daily reminder of how I grew up, right? Dealing with families that just constantly didn't have enough, right? And dealing with issues from the educational standpoint, whether it be funding and or curriculum, things that you have no control over on a school board, right? And wanting to do more. I felt there was more I could do for Ohio families. And I would also tell folks that I think it's important that we have at least some people who represent us that know what it's like to have been among the most needy in our communities. I'm not saying that's everybody, but I think you need some of us sprinkled in there and add a bit more realism to the folks that we're serving with. So that's probably, you know, the most concise way of kind of talking about my background and why I chose to run.
Awesome. Thank you. So you, for those that don't know, you currently occupy the seat that you're running for re-election for.
Yeah.
While in office and just even looking ahead, what has been your primary set of responsibilities as a state rep?
Sure.
Just the role itself from your perspective.
Sure.
What has been
sure.
your primary focus?
Well, I think the first thing I'll lead with is that the word representative. Right. As I tell people all the time, I'm a representative. I'm not a monarch. Right. So my job is to make sure that I am representing the views of my constituents. Now, that does not always mean representing the views of elected officials in my district. Right. So certainly that's a big part of it, too. But there are times when, you know, when you have to be willing to say, hey, listen, I've talked to hundreds of constituents about an issue. I've gotten thousands of phone calls about an issue. Right. Like that has to weigh more. Right. So first and foremost, I focus on how do I collect and really represent the views of my constituents? I think also from a business standpoint, part of my job is to be an advocate and to be someone who helps to solve problems for our small businesses and large ones, too. But predominantly small businesses in terms of helping them steward them through the agency process. So I was a lot of state agencies. That we ask our small business owners to have to understand. And sometimes they have urgent needs and those needs are in the queue somewhere. And I'll get a phone call and they'll say, hey, rep, you know, I'll give you a basic example. I have a liquor license that I'm waiting on and we want to open up on X date and we haven't gotten approval yet. And I know my application's in and can you help me out? Well, I love that question, right? I get to call the state agency up and say, hey, you know, I have a small business that, you know, that needs X, Y, and Z, right? I mean, so certainly that part of it. And then I think also as well, you know, really working to support and introduce legislation that impacts people's lives, you know, and so I think that last part, I think gets glossed over quite a bit, but that part's, I think in some ways the most important. And so that connects the first thing I said and the last thing I said, which was how do you collect stories, right? I think of myself as being a collector of stories. You know, I listen to my constituents' stories and my small business owners' stories. And I say, okay, now how do I take those stories and distill those stories into actionable legislation that we can introduce and or support that's going to really have a meaningful impact on the problems that they are bringing to me as their state legislator?
So from the business community's perspective, we always like to see bipartisanship in action, whether it's Columbus or DC or even here locally in our different municipalities. You've now been in the House for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
What has been your approach to bipartisanship and working across the aisle to get things done, especially in this political landscape?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that's an interesting question, right? I mean, there are some people on both sides who you call them bomb throwers, right? They're engaged in sort of messaging, and they want to call things out, and they'll stand on the desk and yell. And I think certainly there's a place for those folks, you know, on both sides of the aisle. But that's not my role. That's not how I see my. That's not my brand, right? You know, my approach has been to be thoughtful and considerate, and to be professional. I mean, like my own personal background, I've worked in corporate America for almost 20 years now, and you don't get things done jumping on a table. Right. You get things done, you know, bringing a high level of professionalism and collegiality and having the ability to at times let things go. Right. So we may disagree on a certain piece of legislation. That does not have to ruin our relationship on the go forward. Right. So let's focus on the things that we do agree on and the things that we don't agree on. You know, please know that I'm willing to listen to what you had to say. I'm asking that you do the same. Just be persuadable. You know, I think you can't be intellectually honest if you don't enter conversations with a certain degree of, an ability to be persuaded, you know, if you will. So bipartisanship is a built in part of my brand. You know, something I think I become known for. And if you look at my voting record, my voting record is very centrist. You know, I voted on both sides of the aisle, and I think that speaks for itself.
Great. So zooming out from a policy perspective, over the next 5 to 10 years, what do you think is the biggest economic opportunity for the state, and how would you hope to see the legislature participate in that?
Wow. I mean, that's a great question too, right? These are all great questions. Because there's like 10 things that jump into my head, right? But if I'm distilling it down to sort of basic principles, I think workforce development is a huge problem in Ohio. And it's not just that we don't have enough skilled workers or workers in general, right? We haven't done the work to match the workers we need with the industries, right? And that ties into part B. I'm going to give you two part answer. It's the workforce development piece as far as not having enough workers and enough of the right type and kind of workers. But that problem is exacerbated even more so by the fact that we are not producing enough people in Ohio. Right. If you look at Ohio's population, we are 20% below the replacement rate in Ohio, 20% below the replacement rate, which means we rely on folks coming into Ohio from outside other states, for example. Right. And so we've got to do more to incentivize people to have children that live in Ohio. Right. So biggest single issue over the next 5 to 10 years. I think it's a two-part answer. I think it's workforce development, and then I think it's how do we encourage native Ohioans to have more children, you know? And there's other things we can do to encourage that, you know, child care, for example, paid family medical leave. But that's kind of the basics of what I would say is the biggest issue. Yeah.
Just to go a little bit deeper, you mentioned aligning education and industry needs.
Yeah.
What's an example or two? You have the benefit of being an incumbent and being close to a lot of these issues. What's an example of the state doing something well that you think we should double down on, or maybe something that they're not doing that you would like to see?
Well, I wish I could give you an answer to something I think they're doing well. I think that there's a lot of well-intentioned people, you know, let me say that, on both sides of the aisle, right? But we haven't as of yet done the hard work, right? And the hard work means, I think as a state legislature, executive branch too, I would include in this, we have to be more intentional about how do we create opportunities for university presidents, large and small business owners, primarily public school superintendents and folks to basically be sitting down in rooms at the local and regional and state level to have very real conversations called workforce planning. You know, you think about how any corporation works, right? In large corporations, every year they go through a strategic planning process. I have 30 departments. They all have needs, right? And there's a process where we sit down and we talk to every department about what their needs are. And the goal there is to align it, right? I think the state government needs to be playing a bigger role in being that convener and then organizer. So that way we are doing a better job of matching the needs of a Cleveland Clinic or Summa Health System, you know, or AES here in Akron, right? Or First Energy, matching their needs with, okay, hey, you know, the University of Akron and Kent State, right? You know, like I'm First Energy. I'm talking to U of A or Kent State about what I need more of, right? Is U of A now also talking to Akron Public Schools? We have these college and career academies, right? What does that community look like to APS? Listen, we need next year, over the next 5 years, we need 437 more of X worker, right? We haven't done those jobs, right? We haven't been intentional in how we do that. Right now, Summa Health System, Akron General, Children's Hospital, they all have hundreds of job openings, right? Can't find folks to fill them though, right? Because there's this disconnect there. So I think, again, I think that's something that I would really press upon, like, and whether that's, you know, creating a special task force or a committee, but there has to be an initial step. So are we being intentional about how do we set up a cadence to have regular conversations and how we put that alignment together?
Yeah. So you also hinted at in your previous response, population or being attractive,
yeah,
whether it's for business investment or people.
Yeah.
What's your vision for making Ohio more competitive?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, I think, you know, so first to answer that question, I want your listeners to understand, because because sometimes people think, well, Ohio is just a small state, you know, like, what does it really matter what happens here? Well, so just step back a step. Ohio is the eighth largest economy in America. Right? Out of 50 states, we're like seventh or eighth largest economy by GDP, just shy of $1 trillion. I think $974 billion GDP in Ohio. What really blows people's minds, John, is that we're the 20th largest economy in the world by GDP. 20th in the world. There are 186 countries, approximately, right? We're the 20th largest economy in the world, right? So now, sort of stepping forward, you know, as we kind of think through, and give me that second part of your question again. It was the
your vision for making Ohio more competitive, whether it's for business investment, people, job creation.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah, so that's where the workforce development piece comes in. You know, again, providing enough labor, period, right? I would say secondarily, I think we've got to be a bit more thoughtful about the regulatory burden. You know, I think that we can certainly be smarter about that. I think third, I think tax conformity, I think, is an issue. I mean, we have over 7,400 taxing jurisdictions in Ohio, over 700, I think almost 700 of those are municipal, you know, nature. Helen, we got over 440 jurisdictions in Ohio that levy a bed tax, for God's sake, right? I mean, so again, not that that's bad, but again, there's a whole lot. So those are all burdens on businesses, right? Healthcare as well, healthcare costs as well, you know? And so if you're thinking about how do we make Ohio more attractive, I think you have to address those things, right? I think employers have to say, and listen, Ohio is a state, they are producing high quality skilled laborers. So I'll give you an example. The Intel plant that they've been talking about in Columbus for a long time, that's a $1 billion project. They need 10,000 electricians for that job. We don't have 10,000 electricians in Ohio, as an example, right? So we think about the types of kinds of industries that we want to attract. We have to know what those industries are. This is that planning piece. And then again, how are we creating alignment to create the workforce that's going to attract those folks to want to be here? And certainly we could talk about the things I just mentioned. I could also add energy on there too, energy needs, right? By 2030, we're projecting, you know, a 1 to 3 gigawatt deficit in energy, which is between 700,000 and 2.1 million homes a year that won't have enough energy by 2030 in Ohio, right? So these are all things that are tied together. So sorry for the lengthy answer, but these are all things I think are tied together that people need to hear.
Yeah, context. No, absolutely. I think that's great. So that was in response to a question about the whole state for your district, for maybe our region here,
yeah,
more locally.
Yeah.
Would that response be any different, or would it be more of the same?
I think it's more of the same. You know, I to be a bit more granular, I would say in the 34th district, which is obviously part of a larger region, I think advanced manufacturing technology, I think is an area of growth for us. You know, that we could again do more around. I think also healthcare and social services are sort of another big area. You know, I think housing development, you know, as far as workforce housing development, right? How do we create housing that's closer to some of these large employers, you know, in our district, you know, that is affordable as well, you know, because you don't want people having to travel long distances or, you know, in order to get to a place. I think public transit is another thing as well. How we, what does the bus line look like? I mean, right now it's something that we talk about all the time, you know? So, so that's how I would sort of skinny my answer down to, to our district. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So a majority of our chamber membership are small businesses.
Yeah.
Many are entrepreneurs. What do you view to be the state's role in supporting small business growth and entrepreneurs as they're looking to either start a company, expand a company?
Yeah. I mean, to your point, there are just shy of 1 million small businesses in Ohio, right? And when you think through how we support small businesses and entrepreneurs on the small business side, you know, some of it I talked about earlier is, you know, how are we creating a more friendly tax code for them? How are we, what are we doing to drive down healthcare costs, right, for them and or to support some of those healthcare costs from the state level? You know, of course, the workforce development, that's going to be a common theme in every, almost every answer I give you so far. There's a workforce development piece. And then I think on the, I think we, you know, we could do a bit more on revisiting tax carve-outs, right, as well. I mean, you know, I think going with, because right now the way we do, you know, the way that we do tax carve-outs is very sort of industry and or employer specific. And I think that we could broaden that out a bit, you know, whether it be looking at R&E expensing. I know the Ohio Society of CPAs talks about, a lot about that, you know, and then on the entrepreneurial side of it, you know, I think the state can and should be investing more money in small business incubators, right? How do we lower the barriers of entry to folks who want to be entrepreneurs, right? There's a lot of folks who have great ideas. Right here in Akron, we have the Bounce Innovation Hub, right, which I think does a great job locally. You know, Jessica, who runs that, is fantastic. You know, Sublette, Jessica Sublette, you know, make sure we give her a plug here. You know, she's done a great job leading Bounce. You know, and so, but how do we broaden that out? Well, first of all, how we support Bounce more here in this area? And then how do we broaden out from a state level and so really investing more in small business incubators? You know, because there's a lot, I think the state has a role to play in idea generation more so than we are currently invested in.
That's great. So you've mentioned a number of topics across a couple different questions from an economic development perspective, again, high level statewide. What are the most critical investments? There's an operating budget coming up.
Yeah.
Whoever wins is going to have to be part of that process starting really this fall going into January. What are some of the most critical investments you hope to see in that budget that would impact, again, our competitiveness as a state?
Well, I mean, I think public education is a big thing, you know, and, you know, so obviously I don't want to be campaigning on your podcast, right? But I feel compelled to point out.
There's a candidate interview.
Roger that. You know, but I do feel compelled to point out that we are woefully underfunding our public education system in Ohio. And, you know, 90% of our kids attend public schools. You know, and I've always said to people that if you really believe in innovation, innovation is predicated upon competition. Well, competition is predicated upon having competitors that can compete, right? So when you underinvest, you know, in a system that educates 9 out of our 10 kids, you are lessening, you are decreasing the number of viable competitors. So the competition is weaker, right? So the innovation, the ideas that are coming out are not as innovative. Right. So one, we got to invest more in public education. I think two, we have got to be working harder to create support for people to have kids in Ohio. Right. You know, as far expanding the child care tax credits. Right. Because child care is expensive. You know, two kids, $25,000 a year. Right. You know, that's a lot of money. People that want to have kids, they don't have paid leave. I mean, did you know, for example, John? Only 25% of Ohio workers have access to paid family leave.
I did not.
That's it. Only 25%, which means that there are 4.5 million Ohio workers that do not have access to paid family leave, which means that when they have a child, that's a financial hardship for them. Okay. And now that they have the child, they've suffered through having a child for 6 to 10 weeks, and they go back to work having not been paid. And now there's childcare issues. Childcare is expensive, right? I mean, so So those are things that I think we should be investing more in. How do we support, the cost of childcare, obviously education. I talked earlier about, I think energy investments are really huge. Again, we're lucky here in Akron. We don't deal with a lot of blackouts or blackouts here, rolling blackouts in Ohio. But I'm telling you, the next 4 years, we're looking at a very tough situation from an energy standpoint, right? So how do we supply energy? So we don't complete. So we're not investing in energy infrastructure, right? And the tough thing about that is that, you want to build a new turbine plant today, it's 5 years before it's done, right? I mean, so public education, supporting people having children, obviously energy, healthcare would be kind of the next thing I would say. How are we, investing in healthcare and ensuring that people have access to healthcare? How are we ensuring that providers, are being reimbursed at a rate that allows them to provide the care, right? Did you know, for example, that the average person who's on Medicaid, which is 3.3 million Ohioans, so a quarter, one every four Ohioans is on Medicaid, right? The reimbursement rate for Medicaid is 60 cents on it. If Medicare is a dollar, Medicaid is 60 cents on a dollar for Medicare, right? So basically what you're saying is that providers, they're paying more to be a provider than they're being reimbursed for the service. So those are just some high level things I would love to see us invest further in here in the next GA.
Great. How top of mind is ensuring stability or predictability in policies that you work on? And what role, if any, do you see for the business community to help inform what that could look like?
I mean, a lot of my time has been spent talking to the Ohio Chamber, obviously this chamber, NFIB, which, for those who are listening, that's the National Federation of Independent Businesses. So that's businesses that do under $2 million a year in revenue and or have fewer than 20 employees, right? So a lot of my time talking with these folks, and they call out a lot of the same issues, right? I mean, you mentioned predictability, right? So a lot of that is sort of the taxing structure, right? A lot of that is being able to predict with some certainty from 1 year to the next, am I going to have enough people to come work in this job? Am I going to have enough applicants for these jobs, right? Can I fill these jobs? Do I have people that have the skills to do the jobs, And then also I talked about, the ever-changing, we're having all these tax conversations, right? Of course, property taxes are always on the menu, right? I talked earlier in the interview about the number of taxing jurisdictions, right? So certainly addressing that. I think the state has a role to play in addressing healthcare costs, right? I mean, healthcare costs have been anything but predictable, right? So if you're a small business owner and you can't plan from one day to the next what it's going to cost to provide insurance to your employees, you may not provide insurance to your employees. Right. So which gets us into the other category of there's a lot of people that are working, that they're working jobs, but they don't work full time. So they don't get health insurance and some of them are not allowed to work full time because the employer can't provide health insurance. Right. And there are large employers that do this, too, by the way. I'm not going to name any names, but we all know who they are, so.
So let's zoom ahead about 2 years. Let's assume you win re-election.
Yeah.
2 years from now, what does success look like for you as a state legislator as you reflect?
So thank you for assuming that. I appreciate that. I love the positive vibes. But listen, what I think success looks like in the next 2 years is we have, number one, we have gone back to the Fair School Funding Formula, to fund our public schools. Two, we have taken actions to broaden our tax base. I mean, I ran on a platform of let's lower property taxes. I have a gigantic bill that we've been working on. I've been meeting with all of our electeds for the last several months on a property tax bill that will demonstrably lower people's property taxes. That's something I ran on. Success to me is that bill getting passed to provide real property tax relief to owner-occupied property owners. I would say number three, we have we have done something to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates for our providers, things that lower barriers to access. And even though I don't have any rural hospitals in my district, we have 11 rural hospitals that are on the verge of closing because of those Medicaid reimbursement rates being so low. So to me, success also is looking at broadly is that these hospitals are still open and functioning, in 2 years. Also, we're 2 years closer to having an energy plan, that's going to ensure that you and I are not dealing with blackouts, rolling blackouts by 2030. So those are just some things I think about what success looks like. Again, education, property taxes, healthcare access. I would love my small business owners to come back and say, you know what, thanks for the work that you've done, to clean up the tax code. Thanks for the work that you've done, to hopefully pass a state funded Family Medical Leave Act, so that way, my workers can have kids and whatnot. Thanks for the work that you've done to align, our employers and our university heads, and our public schools leadership, right? Thanks for that work as well. And then last but not least, I would say, one thing we haven't talked about here is AI. Thanks for your work to kind of call out, that we are transitioning, we're in the process of transitioning back. We don't know it yet, John, but we're in the process of transitioning back from a services-based economy to more of a manufacturing trade-based economy, meaning that most of the jobs that we've, as a state and a country, we've last 35 years, we've moved wholly into services, right? Legal services, financial services, insurance services. What AI can do, it can do increasingly large amounts of that work. But you know what AI can do? It can't fix your plumbing. It can't put a roof on your house, right? So it can't run wiring in your home, right? So I think we're going to see a transition back to, so hopefully the last thing people will say is hopefully they'll say, thank you for calling out the importance of supporting our skilled trade and labor, creating programs that route more and more kids to going the skilled trade route, because the average age of a plumber is 48 years old. Average age of an electrician is 51, right? So we have these are classes of workers that we need and that are aging out rapidly.
Thank you for that. So before we wrap up and we hear some closing remarks, I want to do a few rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
Get your brief perspective.
Yeah. I'll try and be brief.
Okay. What do you view to be the biggest barrier to business growth in Ohio?
I would say workforce development. Yeah.
One policy you would change or implement immediately?
Oh, what policy or data? I'd like to see us go back to the Fair School Funding Formula.
Industry with the most growth potential in our state?
I would say advanced manufacturing technology, healthcare, social services would be the top two. Yep.
One word describing Ohio's economic future.
Incandescent.
Biggest misconception about state government.
that it is as inefficient as people think it is.
Well, Representative Paul, thank you. Any closing remarks, anywhere someone could go to learn more about you and the campaign?
Yeah, our campaign website is DerrickHall4Ohio.com. Again, that's Derrick, D-E-R-R-I-C-K. So DerrickHall4Ohio.com. You can follow us on social media as well. We're on Facebook, Instagram, all the things, and I would say, just as a closing remark,
mm-hmm.
I just would want to, let me just say this. Now that we're running for re-election, right? One of the questions I get asked all the time is, what do you see happening in the next year or two? What do you think is going to change in the next 2 years? And my answer has become this. You, the voter, are going to decide that. If you like what you've gotten the last 15 years in Ohio, now I am being political, right? I mean, Republicans have run... they have the supermajority in the House, the Senate, Governor's Mansion, Supreme Court, and so if you are unhappy with the state of things in Ohio, the last thing you can do is blame a Democrat. Okay. And the choices that I'll tell you this, the budget we passed last year, it's the first budget in I think 8 years that not one Democrat voted for. So we've traditionally done it. A decent job of having a bipartisan budget, at least some Democrats will vote for a budget. That's how far to the right this state legislature has currently gone. They're not one Dem voted for it, and we are about to reap what we have sown. So my call to action, if you will, my charge to voters is that if you want different, do better at the ballot box in November. If you want different, if you want better, do better at the ballot box in November. That's what I would leave you with. Budgets are about choices, right? So we all have budgets at home. Right. More of one thing usually means less of another, So if you want strong public schools, if you want people to have health care, if you believe in a viable, cogent energy policy, if you believe in healthcare access, which I think I already said, if you believe in supporting your environment, right, if you believe in small businesses having a nurturing environment to grow in, think long and hard about how you're voting at the ballot box in November.
Representative Hall, thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thanks again for having me here.